Into the Fifth Down Podcast, football for fans, by fans.
Hello and welcome to the Fifth Down. I'm your host, Adam Glass. Alongside, as always, my partner, Ryan Jones. We are recapping everything in the NFL after 6 weeks of action, getting everybody ready for week 7 in the NFL. A lot of interesting things happening this past weekend. A lot of injuries that we want to go over. A lot of people out there. Yeah, out for the season, a lot of people on IR, things of that nature. As always, we invite you to follow us on Twitter. We're at Fifth Down NFL. Like on Facebook, it's facebook.com/fifthdownpodcast. And on the website, it's fifthdown.org. You can find all the latest podcasts, any blogs or anything that we put up throughout the week on there, anything you like about the show, anything you don't like, any questions you have, anything you want us to get to on the show that we may not cover, if your favorite team, players, something like that, please throw it out there on the website. And, of course, if you do enjoy what you hear, there is the donate option on the website. We don't do any kind of advertising or sponsors on the show, nothing like that. If you like what you hear, please don't hesitate to donate so we can keep bringing you all the action week in and week out. All right, let's start with the G-Men. After a 3-game win streak, they get back to 3-2. Looks like they're in the middle of this division, a division that's actually becoming somewhat competitive with the Cowboys' successes and the Eagles' successes and whatnot. So it's shaping up to be a competitive division, whereas at season start, we thought it was going to be one of the worst in football. But now, after the first 5 weeks of the season, we see the Giants right back in the thick of things, and everybody's starting to get their stuff together. That all kind of took a sidestep this past week, and they get kind of annihilated in this game. They don't really play well. They don't really show up. They, in fact, don't really score any points until practically the end of this game. It was certainly not one of the Giants' finest moments. Actually, I'm sorry. They did get shut out. It was the second shutout of the season after the Jets did that 31-0 previous week. So two New York teams are the two teams that have posted goose eggs this season. Not quite the stats that you want to be known for in the city. But it ended up being 27-0. The biggest loss, though, for the Giants, despite the loss, they're still 3-3. They're still kind of in the thick of things in this division. They're 1-1 as far as divisional record. They're 3-3. Two games behind the Eagles and Cowboys. So the season's still early enough to where they have a lot of ground. They can make up that ground. However, the biggest loss, of course, is that of Victor Cruz, the one, like, real, I don't say consistent figure on this team, because we'll say he's only been starting for a couple of years. He has had his issues with drops or just not being able to get open for a couple of weeks during the season. But it looked like he was starting to get things turned around, and certainly with the emergence last week of OBJ, it seemed like he was going to have some more open looks just with coverage being shifted away from him. And obviously, he goes down to our tower attendant. In his knee, had surgery on it, but he's done for the season. A couple things I want to just touch on with the Giants. Now, we saw a lot of emotion from Cruz on the field. I mean, obviously, once it happened, you saw right away he knew it was bad. He knew that he snapped something that he was done for the year. I mean, you were just able to see it, the way he was clutching, the way he was just emotional on the field. Now, he was getting carted off the field, he was crying. He was still just openly sobbing. Now, I don't have a problem with that from NFL player. I don't have a problem with that from any man, so to speak, for something that serious as that. But I have to ask, what is he crying about? Is he sad for the team because he's no longer going to be there to contribute and help his brothers win? Is he crying for himself because he's hurt, he's not going to be able to do the thing he loves for the next 6-8 months? Or is he crying because this is something that's going to affect his career, this is something that's going to affect his endorsements, he's not going to be showing up in a whole lot of commercials the rest of the year, you know, things of that nature. So where is the emotion coming from, or does it even matter?
I honestly don't think it matters. I mean, I think if anything, you'd want to say just because it's a lot of pain, those type of tendon/ligament injuries tend to be very painful. I mean, going back to my 9th grade biology class, I'm pretty sure that's where a lot of nerve endings actually terminate. So those, just by nature, tend to be painful, which is why dislocations tend to be very painful also. I think he's probably just caught up in the emotion of everything.
It certainly hurts. It's not something that we've really seen Victor Cruz. We've seen him banged up a little bit here and there. We've seen him miss some games and some portions of the season throughout his short career with the Giants, but nothing to where he's been out for the remainder of a season, something that's requiring immediate surgery such as this. So there's a lot of uncertainty regarding what's next and what he has to go through to get back to game shape and things of that nature. Now, Giants coming up are really staring down not quite as tough a schedule as the Jets are finishing up, but certainly not the easiest part of the schedule. You got the Cowboys coming up next week. You have your bye, you can get a little rest, but then you got the Colts, the Seahawks, the Niners, Cowboys again. So, I mean, that right there, you have five games in a row that really you can circle as all losses. So you're 3-3 right now. OBJ needs to step up, but he's still a rookie. Andre Williams needs to step up, he's still a rookie. Jernigan's out, Victor Cruz is out. So you got Ruben Randle on the outside, and like I said, OBJ staring down the barrel of again.
Well, actually,
potentially 0-5.
So actually, today they signed Kevin Ogletree.
Kevin Ogletree.
I'm just saying. At least you know they're not leaving too much a chance.
I think there's a reason he's been sitting at home for a season and a half. It just feels like.
Yep. I mean.
But okay, so look at your schedule coming up. Cowboys, Colts, Seahawks, Niners, Cowboys. Those five games. What's your record at the end of those five?
I don't know.
Step away from you being a Giants fan. I know that's difficult because I can't really do it as a Jets fan. But stepping away from that, you're 3-3 right now and you're staring at those five teams, or four teams, those five games.
Look. I think the way the season is progressing right now. It's hard to say. I mean, I definitely, you know, forget, you know, trying to distance myself as a Giants fan. I can definitely foresee the Giants winning some of those games, even the Cowboys game. Look, I mean, the difference between what the Eagles did and what other teams haven't really been able to do in since the first couple weeks of the season is they got successful with their pressure to the point that it was obvious that the offensive line was just demoralized completely. The question is, can the other teams do that? Right. Remember, it's not the same Giants team that had a horrible run defense. They're not a great run defense, but they're not horrible like they were last year and actually, let's be honest, a few years before that. So the threat of a DeMarco Murray, yes, he will hurt you, but again, you know, guys like that, as long as you limit the damage they can do, you tend to be okay. The Cowboys' defensive backfield, for all its supposed talent, hasn't really played that great this season, right? I mean, the one surprising aspect of the Cowboys this season has been that Tony Romo's actually been figuring out which team he plays for. Beyond that, I mean, they've played a lot of good games, and I think the Giants are going in a pretty good direction right now. I mean, one loss, albeit a crappy and really embarrassing, and I want to punch them in the face loss, it's a bit of a setback. But I think, all in all, I mean, I still think at the minimum we'll be knocking on the door of a wild card spot at the end of the season. The schedule was tight. I mean, we played the NFC West this year. But I think the Giants match up well against a lot of those teams. I think the Giants match up well against the Niners. I think the Giants, we could probably count the Seahawks game as a loss. But at the same time, the Seahawks aren't the Seahawks they used to be either. I think even though we should probably lose that game, I wouldn't be surprised if we come up with a win on that one. I mean, I just think it's too early. It's week six. I mean, you can't call the season finished. Hell, I even have hope for the Jets.
Oh, I have zero hope for the Jets. The Giants, I want to say it's finished. I want to say that you're probably going to end up finishing 7-9. Just looking at the schedule, I don't see a lot of wins. But I see maybe 4-6 the rest of the way. You're 3-3 right now, but you have a 35-14 loss to the Lions. You got a 25-14 loss to the Cards. And you got a 27-0 loss against the Eagles. All three of those are winning teams. You haven't beaten a winning team. The combined record of the three teams that you've beaten are 6-12. So I don't see the Giants really doing a whole lot the rest of the season. And unfortunately, after going out and spending more money than any other team in free agency, and still having a sub 500 season, which is probably what I see happening. It's probably going to be the end of Tom Coughlin. We'll see what happens there. As has been the case all season long on this show, we've kind of been starting it off with the Jets and the Giants, so let's continue that trend and we'll move over to the Jets real quick. Now that they're 1-5 and we're going into New England on a short week, and we have Buffalo the week after that, it's really getting to this point of the season where we know the season's lost, we know things aren't happening, and the talk of firing or trying to start and ramp up, and as far as where they can do it now, at the end of the season, if they can do it at all, blah, blah, blah. Here's the thing. He's probably going to be let go at the end of the season, and that's probably fine. As much as I like Rex Ryan, he's a great defensive coordinator. He's a great defensive genius. He's one of the best defensive minds that this game is ever going to know. He's going to go down as one of the best defensive minds, right up there with his dad and Ditka and all those guys. But as long as Itzik is the GM, Ryan will not work there. It's not going to be a cohesive unit. He's had too much power taken away from him in recent years. He no longer has the type of control authority needed to actually be a head coach. He can't make decisions on depth chart, on 53-man roster, on draft picks. I'm surprised they're even allowing him to still make challenges and call timeouts. It's ridiculous what they've taken away and the way they've shut him up in the media. You can't tell me that he went from being this brash, say, off the cuff, say what you feel type of guy who came out in a fat suit and a wig to poke fun at his brother, to this quiet reserve guy who refuses to say anything negative about his team and refuses to answer any questions in the media and refuses to take ownership of anything. It's all a Jet decision, blah, blah, blah. It's unbelievable and it's depressing what has become of him. Now, if and when he's fired, he's going to be picked up as a defensive coordinator almost immediately. He may even be in the running for a head coaching position for a team like Oakland, who Mark Davis would probably hire Rex Ryan and unleash the Rex. Like, he'd probably say, look, I want you to be who you are. You have maybe not complete control of the team because he doesn't know offense that well, but certainly you would have more say. That would be a situation where you're in an organization that, you know, you're known for being brash and you're known for saying whatever you think without Davis, and Ryan kind of fits that bill. I can see that working there. I don't think Tony Sperano is going to be the head coach in Oakland at the beginning of next season. The problem now that the Jets have is they do have a very solid defense. Minus the cornerback position, we know that that's their issue, and that wasn't addressed, and that's a lot of the blame that's being put on Izzy. But they do have a very solid defense, especially their front seven. Rex is a player's coach. Defensive players love him and would follow him anywhere in this league if given the opportunity. We saw how many people came over from Baltimore when he came to the Jets. David Harris and Bart Scott and a bunch of other guys. David Harris still there. My problem now is that Mo Wilkerson, we have a player option for him following next season. He's eligible for a contract extension now that he's in his fourth season with the team. He's not a free agent at the season, but he's on that player option, but we can lock him up long term. He is one of the best defensive players in the league. He's going to be paid probably as one of the highest defensive players in the league just because of his age and his talent level. If you fire Rex before you lock him up long term, he's gone. He's not going to stay. He's not going to take the long-term contract. He's going to test free agency. And whether he signs with Rex Ryan's new team or not, I'm not even saying that. I just can almost guarantee you that if Rex Ryan's not the coach and he becomes a free agent, if he's not locked up, he will not stay with this team. He'll test free agency because whoever's going to come in is not going to be as good of a defensive coach as Rex Ryan was and is not going to have the players' backs the same way Rex Ryan does. Almost to a fault that way Rex Ryan does. So they need to pay that man big-time money before pulling the trigger on letting Rex go. I mean, you can say the same about David Harris. Sheldon Richardson, we have a couple weeks on, so we don't have to worry about that. But Damon Harrison and Mohammed Wilkerson need to be locked up way before you make any decisions on pulling the trigger with Rex Ryan, whether they do or not. In other news, the team is 1-5. They completely stink. I don't care. You want to point the finger at Geno. You want to point the finger at the receivers, at the cornerbacks, at Izzik, at Rex. It's all Woody. It all comes down to Woody and the poor decisions that he's made trying to own a football team. He's trying to take all the bad, the negative attributes of Al Davis and Jerry Jones and Dan Snyder and just roll them into one big jumble of a disaster of an owner. He's where all the problems stem from. The team's a disaster. It's going to be a 2-14, 3-13 type of season. They're going to end up with a top 5 pick, and they're probably going to screw that up again. Anything you want to mention about the Jets?
I'm sorry, I just find your rants are getting more and more. No, I mean, look, the Jets are, they're screwed. I mean, I don't know what the solution is. I definitely think it's time for regime change in the front office as far as coaching goes. I'm not sure if the owner's to blame. I mean, there's some cases where you can definitely say the owner of is being, you know, pretty detrimental to the success of a team. Not sure you can say that in the case of the Jets.
Okay, we don't know for a fact that Woody was behind was the one pulling the strings with Tim Tebow, was the one pulling the strings with drafting Geno Smith in the second round because he's a headline type of guy. There's a lot of that stuff we don't know for a fact. We don't know for a fact that Woody's actually the one who's taken the power away from Rex. One thing we do know that's been, like, pretty much confirmed is that when it came to hiring the new general manager before last season, one of the prerequisites or one of the caveats for the new GM was that they had to keep Rex for at least a year. So right off the bat, he's pulling some strings and he's hiring a general manager who doesn't want this guy, but he's forcing him to keep him. That is what, and I just don't see how you can go into a football season with that kind of mindset. That you have a GM and a coach who don't necessarily like each other, or a GM who doesn't want him as a coach, but he's being forced to keep that person as his coach.
Look, I'm sure it happens a lot more than you think. And, you know, like a part of me kind of just doesn't really want to, like, I don't want to speculate too much. You know, like, I kind of feel like there's just too much that we don't know. I mean, there's a lot of emotion going on about the Jets right now, and it's completely understandable. I mean, the thing is, I can't say you don't make a good point about anything you said, but, like, I kind of feel like it's just too much Monday morning quarterback, I guess. You know, like, there's just so much going on that we just don't know about. I mean, for everything we've been saying for the past couple of weeks, it could be the complete opposite. It could be Rex that doesn't want to be there anymore. It could, you know what I mean? That's very unlikely that that's the case, you know.
Oh, I don't think Rex wants to be there at all, but I think he's doing the best thing for Rex. If he came out there and he blasted it, like, he blasted the organization, he said, these players stink, and I can't work with this talent, and this is a joke of an organization for taking this and doing this, and blah, blah, blah. All he's doing is hurting his chances of getting another job. He knows how to play the game. He knows why his brother has not gotten any head coaching consideration. He knows better than that. As brash as he is and as off the cuff as he is, he knows when to keep his mouth shut, he knows when to get along and when to go along. All right. Dallas Cowboys, America's team, goes into Seattle and beats Seattle. DeMarco Murray continues his beast mode on this season. And Tony Romo, I think you kind of touched on it last week, he's playing like a true NFL quarterback. I guess whatever they fixed in his back, they also fixed in his brain. But since he had that back surgery, dude kind of knows what team he's throwing to. He's making some of the right reads. Like, they're playing pretty legit football right now. And it's just, I don't know, that's an impressive win. Despite the 5-1 record, despite you playing well, I mean, that's a true test. To go into Seattle, I think that's only the second time Russell Wilson has lost at home in his career. Granted, it's only 3 seasons, but that's still 18, 19 games, something like that. And that's only, I think, the second time that he's lost at home. That's impressive for Dallas to go in there and play Seattle the way they did and beat Seattle. And it wasn't a blowout by any means, but Dallas pretty much had that game from beginning to end. It was, what, a 30-22 or 23 victory, so only 7 points. But it just looked like Dallas's game. They were playing Dallas football. Not saying that Dallas football is a thing. I'm just saying, like, They were controlling the game. They were controlling the tempo. It looks like they were in the driver's seat for the majority of the game.
Yeah. So look, you know, the truth of the matter is that I think what Dallas was able to do is something that most teams have not been able to do in a very long time. Seattle, the premise of Seattle's, especially their defense, is they go in and they beat you up physically. And if you can match that intensity and that physicality, Seahawks fans, you can write me all the angry emails you want or all the angry tweets you want. It's Ryan KD Jones on Twitter if you want to send out the hate mail. I think for all the talent they have on paper, I don't think Seattle is a complete team in the sense of, they're just loaded with talent. They have some true talented players in a lot of key positions, but the majority of the wins, look at it. The way they beat teams is they physically beat the crap out of them. Look at the Super Bowl. They didn't beat the Broncos obviously they outscored them. That's how you win the game. But they didn't beat the Broncos by going in and putting on this dazzling display of offense. They went in the game, and on both sides of the ball, they pushed the Broncos around. That's how they play. And teams like that, you know, if you can match the same physical intensity as they can, they tend to not always be able to come out on top. I mean, it exposes them a little bit. I mean, we always knew that the Cowboys, and I can't believe I'm saying this, but when the Cowboys run, everything is clicking properly on that team, as offensively at least, they can be a very dangerous team. Problem is, it doesn't tend to click properly too much. But when they're firing, they're on all cylinders, they're a very dangerous team. And if you can mess them physically, like the way, you know, with a running game, for example, I mean, think about it. I mean, how many games since Russell Wilson's been the starter have they had to come back from a really big deficit and had to play in a shootout? They've never really had that experience. They've either lost games or they've just went in and dominated games. They've never actually had to play a game. I guess that's the way to say it.
Right, they're not a team that really gets down by 21 points and has to scramble to get back just because the nature of the physicality that they play and the way that they play on offense. They manage the clock, they keep the ball, they maintain the ball, they play balanced offense. They're not really in a position to where they're down that much. And defensively, they don't allow your opponent to run. They haven't allowed, I think, the average, they were allowing 60 to 70 yards per game on per rush or something like that. It was definitely like under 80 or 85 yards per game they're allowing. DeMarco Murray went in there and rushed for 115 yards, by far the most allowed this season by a rusher against Seattle. And he scores touchdown. He continues the streak, so that's 6 weeks in a row of over 100 yards per game or 100-yard-plus games. He got 785 on the season. We're going to be week 8. They're going to be halfway through the season. It's going to be over 1,000 yards. He'll be on pace for over 2,000. And we'll be talking about, DM2K?
No, I mean, I'm sorry. I think all this crap is the same as it always is. It's just always a bit of a fad. No, I don't want to say a fad. I mean, how do you have a fad in for a player? But I don't think there's not too many players that have been able to sustain a high level play throughout their entire career, and the ones that have been, those are all the ones that we know are going to be in Canton at the end of it when they retire.
Very true. I'm not saying he's going to be able to sustain this for another 2-3 years, but certainly if things continue the way they're going, this is his year. He's going to run away with that MVP, as far as offensively anyway. I'm impressed by what Dallas is doing. Still not a Tony Romo fan. I'm still not a Jason Garrett fan. But I do like some things they're doing, and I'm happy that a team, as a Jets fan, I can be happy for fans of the Cowboys who just watched disaster after disaster, despite the talent on the team finally kind of getting some legitimate football out of them. On the flip side, look at the Atlanta Falcons. They are 2-4 despite having a top-10 quarterback and one of the league's best wide receiver tandems. Matt Ryan is number 2 in the league in passing yards. Julio Jones is number 3 in receiving yards. Warhol is number 3 in the league in tackles. Team is number 4 in the league in scoring. Offensively, they're putting it up. They're doing their thing. They're playing the same kind of football that we're used to from the Falcons. But they're ranked 29th in scoring defense. They're giving up over 28 points per game. So clearly we can identify where the problem is with this team. It's the defense. Their offense is good. The defense is just worse. So they're just giving up slightly more points than they're able to put up week in and week out. And this is a team that's pretty stacked with talent, especially offensively. That's sub 500 and really looking like another disaster season. So do we put this on Mike Nolan, defensive coordinator, and get rid of him? Do we put this on Mike Smith and change the whole coaching staff? Or is this just a product of the tough division? I mean, a division where the Saints are even sub 500 right now. And you just kind of got to play it out, maintain the status quo in terms of your coaching staff and your personnel, and just try to draft some key defensive players. Falcons were thought of as a Super Bowl team a couple years ago, and now they're talking about a second year of top 10 drafting.
I'm not surprised, to be honest with you. I think the Falcons are definitely a victim of drinking their own Kool-Aid. Like a couple years ago, yeah, they were the team. Everyone was picking them to go to the Super Bowl. And then last year, they got decimated, injuries, all kinds of, you know, basically nothing worked right for them. And this year, they're back on track as an offense, but it kind of... I think what's happening with these teams, because if you look at it, the teams that... in that division right now, they're all offensive teams for the most part, right? And they're still struggling. Why? Because they don't have good defenses. And I think we've kind of reached a point in the league where it's no longer good enough to be able to put up 40 points on the scoreboard against your opponent. Like, you have to be able to play both sides of the ball. And the teams that don't do that well are the teams that have been struggling, just looking at their win-loss records. I mean, there's some teams that just out-and-out suck, right? But the powerhouse, I mean, like, statistically, look all those stats that you just listed for the Falcons. If they actually had a halfway decent defense to anchor that team, they wouldn't be in the position that they're in right now. Same thing for the Saints.
Which is funny, because the Saints last year had a good defense. Rob Ryan looked like he had that defense turned around, and this year it just didn't work out. The part of the problem with free agency, and you can put that on the general manager, is they went out and they released a lot of players to free up some cap room to sign Jarius Bird, and he just
but
didn't work out.
Did they though? Did they? Oh, did they have a great defense last year? I mean, or is it just another case of on paper they look like they have a good team, and just the level of play they faced on their opponents kind of made them look better than they were. You know what I mean? Like like the Patriots the last 4 or 5 years have, in my opinion, had a horrendous defense in terms of just being able to out and out stop teams. But what has been what always kept them in games is that their defense always tended to get a lot of turnovers, which is not a bad thing, right? I mean, you want to be in the plus in the turnover category. But when it came time to stopping guys, you know, they were never really that type of team. They just capitalized on their mistakes, on their opponents' mistakes. I mean, sometimes you can't leave it up to chance to win a game for you. You got to go out there and you got to, you know, the offense needs the ball back. You got to go out there and you have to stop the other guy. You're trying to seal a victory for your offense or, you know, whatever the case may be. You need to have a defense that you know you can at least put them on the field and they can secure a victory for you. And these guys just don't have it.
I guess we can agree there. So do we think they're going to maintain status quo in terms of their coaching staff, or is a change going to be made there going back to Atlanta?
What do you change, though? I mean, you get rid of... What do you change? I mean, it's not enough. I mean, look, sometimes...
Go ahead, coach, because Mike Smith, since he's been there, they've been a successful team, but they haven't exactly made any kind of noise in the playoffs. I think they've won one playoff game since he's been there, despite, like I said, Matt Ryan and the great running backs they've had, and Roddy White in his prime, and Tony Gonzalez... at the later end of his prime, Julio Jones for a few years. I mean, Mike Smith's had more toys to work with than most head coaches in this league. and he hasn't been able to bring this team to the NFC Championship game more than, I mean, I think one time he made it there.
Yeah, I mean, I don't.
I mean, Matt Ryan is widely considered a top 10 quarterback. There's times where he's considered a top 5 quarterback. But generally speaking, he's a top 10 quarterback in this league. And that's the biggest piece. They've always had decent running backs, whether it was Michael Turner, whether it was. But obviously now you got Steven Jackson, you got Jaquizz Rodgers, and you got Andre Jones, something. Or whatever. I mean, they don't have issues there. Like I said, Tony Gonzalez for those years. You got Roddy White and Julio Jones for the past few years. There's talent there. Plenty of talent there. And at one point, they did have good defense between Abraham and Robinson. You had good corners and safeties. You had decent linebackers. It's been a very good team, and they just haven't been able to get it done in the postseason. A lot of what we've been seeing out of the Bengals in the past couple of seasons, winning division, good team in the play in the regular season, and just not able to get it done in the postseason.
I think the other problem they've had too is their team just kind of aged away from them. You know, like they just kind of aged out of their opportunities to be able to put together a good team. I mean, they have a lot of young guys left on the field. They don't seem to have the experience that they once had. You know, like who are their top veterans right now? Roddy White and Matt Ryan. I mean,
Steven Jackson. He's at the end of his career, but Steven Jackson's top player is a good veteran.
Yeah.
Alright, we've been talking about the Browns a lot this season, so why not do one more? They just destroyed division rival Steelers, 31-10. Huge victory for Cleveland, huge victory for the fans, for the team, and everything going there. They're really only a game back in that division. A lot of that is because the Bengals, they already had their bye week, so they have that half a game there, and because the Bengals have that tie now, that we'll talk about in a little while. So they're technically only half a game back in the division, so they realistically have a chance at making a push for the playoffs this season. Not a lot is being said about Brian Hoyer and the decisions that Cleveland is going to have to make next season. He's a free agent at the season with Johnny Manziel waiting to take the helm. Now, before I go too far into this, I want to preface it by saying that despite my confessed man crush on Brian Hoyer, he only completed 8 passes, 217 yards in the swing last week. It's not like he's lighting up the board. He's just playing good fundamental football. He has a good rushing attack around him. He's managing the game. He's not losing it. He's not turning it over. Okay, so scenario number one, next season, they stick with Hoyer. They let Manziel just kind of sit on the bench, knowing the fan base is happy with winning in the short term, but still wanting to see the talents of Johnny Manziel. And you know that the second that Brian Hoyer throws an interception or the second he loses the game and looks horrible, your fan base, one that you've basically been screwing over for the past decade and a half, will not hesitate to call for Manziel. Especially since you're making all this money off merchandise for him and all the publicity and everything else around it. So to an extent, because you are Cleveland, it's not like you're a well-respected organization. You do have to kind of cater to your fan base a little bit in situations like that. Scenario number two, they let Hoyer test free agency and leave, and let Manziel take the helm. If he succeeds, great. No harm, no foul. If he fails, as I think Manziel will, it's just more the Browns being the laughingstock of the NFL, and they screwed themselves out of the best quarterback that they've had in the past 20 years, probably, by letting Hoyer just walk away. So how do you win if you're the Browns right now?
I think... Okay, so you're not going to believe this. My personal opinion is the Browns should remain exactly the way they are. I think Brian Hoyer still gives them their best chance at winning. And I don't have the same like man crush and like whatever that you do. I just believe that based off of what I've seen from what their previous like, geez, I don't even know. I've lost count of how many quarterbacks they've had recently. You know, but that revolving door of quarterback that they've had, like I think he's given them the best chance to actually do something this season. They're playing, you know, let's face it, he's not going to be the guy that's going to take you to a Super Bowl, right? He's a game manager at best, but you know, sometimes a game manager is all you need. the Johnny Manziel thing, I just don't buy it. I don't think that he is the savior that the Cleveland franchise has been looking for. I mean, yeah, granted, he hasn't been able to prove himself because, whatever, he's not the guy, right? But I guess I'm kind of a stickler for a stick with what works. I mean, they've been a hell of a lot more successful this season with the way things are than they have been in the past when they've been putting in, Jesus, Brady Quinn. I mean, wasn't that a thing not that long ago? You know, Josh McNown or Caden, one of those McNown dudes. I mean, like, they've just been, they've had no continuity at the quarterback position. And I think if they expect to be a successful team, you have to have some sort of continuity. Even if you know deep down inside this guy is not the future of your team, he's brought you the most stability and success that you've had in a long time. And I think you deserve to he deserves the shot to see what he can do. I mean, like I say, you're not going to win a Super Bowl. I don't think the Browns are going to – I mean, I'm going to go out on a limb here, and again, feel free to send angry emails all you want. I don't think the Browns are going to win a Super Bowl in my lifetime. I just don't.
By the way, Hoyer's the 20th starting quarterback for the Browns, 99.
Yeah, I mean, come on, 20 quarterbacks? You wonder why your team can't win and have a winning season? That says everything right there.
Oh, and not only that, this year, and obviously we're only five games in, but only 2001 was the only year in which the same quarterback started all 16 games. Every other year, they've had two or three different starting quarterbacks. Now, obviously, there was some carryover, but only one season did the same quarterback start all 16 games, and that was Tim Couch in 2001.
I mean, come on. There you go. Enough said.
All right. It's interesting. I like Hoyer. He's probably the only player to come out of New England that I've forgotten all about the fact that he played for New England. I just really do like this guy. I don't like Mike Patton as a head coach. I'm happy to see some kind of success like that. Let's see. We had the tie we mentioned between the Carolina Panthers and Cincinnati Bengals. Tie is always a little fun. Is always a little fun because I guess it's the end of the season. You got those tiebreakers. You got things like that that really kind of mess with the standings and playoff pictures and whatnot. So I don't mind it so much. What kills me is that every time there's a tie, there's always a story that comes out about some player who claims they didn't know you could tie, who thought the game would just continue, who had no idea that it was over, things like that. And Kelvin Benjamin came out this week because he didn't know you can tie in the NFL. And I'm just sitting there like, are you kidding me? Or are you joking? How is it that you guys are professional football players? You all went to college, some of you come to some of the top universities in the country. I understand you're getting your degrees in like artistic appreciation and crap like that. But the fact is you still had to succeed at the high school level, you still have to succeed at some level, at a collegiate level, which means you have to have some working knowledge of whatever it is that you do in your daily lives. You are a football player. You understand the game of football. You study it 24/7. All you know is football. You study game plans. You study film. You study formations. You study all these different things. And you're telling me that you don't know the rules better than fans do. And fine. I can understand to an extent that you're more preoccupied with formations and route trees and all this other nonsense, not nonsense, but all these other things, and you don't have time to worry about the little intricacies like that. But you have, as part of your offensive package that's implemented every week, you have your 2-minute drills, you have your end of game, you have your situational things, you have your, okay, if we're down and time is running out, we have this package we go. You're telling me that at the end of overtime, you don't get something, you don't have a specific package, say, okay, overtime's almost over, the game's over when the clock hits zero, we have this package implemented because that's our get down the field and score, Hail Mary type of situation, whatever it is. Well, if you're not even on the field, you're not hearing that from the defense as well. Like, there's just got to be some kind of disconnect when, with everything going on, you don't understand that the game's over at the end of it. And if that's not enough, the referees as badly as they can kind of butcher it, explaining the rules, they still explain the rules before the coin toss at the beginning of every overtime. And part of what they say is that if it's remained tied at the end of 15 minutes, the game ends in a tie. And I don't know what other, how else you can put that. Like, how are you so ignorant to the game that you play, to the career that you have, to the life that you live, that you don't understand by now that a game, that an NFL game can end in a tie? It drives me crazy when I hear that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess in his defense, ties don't happen often in football.
No, and he's a rookie, and in college you don't have ties. But still, it's like you have these packages implemented for situations. Like, how are you not grasping this?
I don't know, bro.
You're a football player in college. Were you not a fan of the NFL?
Apparently not.
Did you just grow up saying, I love football, I want to play football, but I don't want to watch it. I want to play football for my life. I want to just play football, but I'm not going to look up to any players that were in the NFL because I'm not a fan of the NFL. I'm not a fan of football. But I want to play football and go to college and declare early for the draft, and I want to get drafted by a team and make this my career. But I wasn't a fan enough to know the rules of how the game was played. Come
on! I feel you. yeah, I mean, some people do kind of discredit themselves pretty stupidly in public. But whatever. You knew it was going to happen. There's always an idiot in every bunch, as they say.
It's just... I don't know. And then the other part of this game, and obviously the Panthers weren't on the field to end this game, so you have that little bit of defensive help for self-management. The Bengals offense was on the field to end the game. And Mike Nugent missed the field goal that would have given him the win. The last second, there's 3 seconds left. He kicks the field goal. He makes it. They win. Game over. He misses it. Game ends in a tie, and obviously that's what happened. Now, after the game, Adam Jones, player on the Bengals, calls out Mike Nugent, Adam Jones, cornerback to the Bengals, calls out Mike Nugent, and not directly, like not saying his name directly, but basically calling him out after the missed field goal, which was in tie, basically saying, do your job. You have a job to do. Kick the ball. Kick the field goal. Do your job and kick the field goal. And I look at that, I'm like, you are an asshole. Like, you're a cornerback. So, by your logic, if you want your place kicker to kick the ball and do his job and make the field goal, then you're a cornerback. You should never allow a single receiver to catch a single ball while you were defending. By your rationale, you should never, ever, ever allow a single reception to a receiver that you're defending. And if you did allow a reception to that receiver, then you are not doing your job. Like, that's the logic that you're using right now. Are you kidding me?
Look, let's face it. Kickers have never been the most respected players on the football team.
But a kicker scores more points than a cornerback.
I do not disagree with you. You know, but it's the truth, though. Kickers just never get the same.
Adam Vinatieri has more rings than Adam Jones.
Yeah, I mean, look. Excuse me. I personally never thought it made a big. I thought it was such a big deal that he missed a kick. I mean. Yeah, I mean, look, it sucks when you miss the kick. You know what I mean? But, you know, like you said, things that you're not gonna make 100% of your field goals 100% of the time. I mean, has there even been anyone who's made an entire season 100% accuracy on field goals and point afters?
Up until the NFC Championship game in, what was it, 2000, the Vikings?
Mm-hmm.
Made every single one. Was it Anderson?
Yeah.
Hit every field goal, every pat, and missed the one in the NFC Championship game that sent the Raiders to the... That sent the... Raiders? Who the hell was it? It was the Vikings kicker in the NFC. That would have been the Giants?
Could be, but I don't remember playing... I don't remember playing the Vikings in an NFC Championship game in recent history.
I'm trying to remember. It wasn't recent. It was like 99, 2000, something like that. I'll remember it. Oh, it was Gary Anderson. Gary Anderson, not Mike Anderson. And it was 1990. Was it 98 or was it 99? So it was 98.
Right.
He made every field goal and every pass during the entire season, 98. And then he missed the very last one that would have sent the Vikings to the Super Bowl. Yeah, that's what it was.
I mean, that just kind of shows you how not often this kind of thing happens, so whatever. I don't know, bro.
I might be completely wrong on that. I'm gonna look into it and I'll put it on the show next week. But no, Gary Anderson in 98 hit every field goal and every pass. That I'm sure. He had every single one that season. Maybe that wasn't the year that they did it. Right. This makes me sound like an idiot. 98, he hit every single field goal and every single pass. Only kicker in NFL history to do that. 100% made every single one. 99, he missed 39-yard field goal in the NFC Championship game. In 99. That's what happened. And that's what sent the Falcons to the Super Bowl. Right. That's what sent the Falcons to the Super Bowl. And everybody was disappointed because the Falcons never stood any kind of chance against the Broncos in the Super Bowl.
Oh, yeah. Yep, I remember that game.
But it came back to me. All right. Last thing. Kirk Cousins, 0-4 since becoming the starter for Injury 3. And I saw a couple reports this week as far as talk regarding benching him in favor of Colt McCoy. And I want to ask those people, what has Colt McCoy recently done this? I mean, I looked at Kirk Cousins' numbers, and they're not great. No 0-4 record is bad, but outside of the 2-3 interception quarters he's had this season, and then one was obviously the fourth quarter of last week's game, he's been okay. I mean, he has over 60% completion percentage, which is better than RG3's completion percentage for all of last season. 10 touchdowns to 8 interceptions, which, again, it's not great, but it's better than some other quarterback. And I just think that's... Beatwriter is trying to make a story.
Oh, definitely. I 100% agree with you on that. Like, so they're like freaking sharks circling the freaking sinking ship. They just kind of, or I guess vultures circling the dying. Yeah, my metaphors kind of suck, but you know what I mean. they're just looking for a story.
Yeah, but I will say that despite the mediocre numbers or numbers that are comparable to RG3's, the fact that he's 0-4 means that when RG3 is healthy, he's starting again. Cousins has not done anything to maintain any kind of grasp on the starting job there. He's played okay, but he hasn't played better. He hasn't played head and shoulders above RG3 to the point where he's taking his job away.
First of all, did you really think that if he did anything short of winning a Super Bowl for them, that he actually had a chance of taking that job from RG3?
Yes, if he was winning games, if he was 4-0 instead of 0-4, he would be the starter when RG3 came back. I think so. If it was still Kyle Shanahan, maybe not, but under Jay Gruden, yeah. I think if he was winning games, something that the Redskins have not done, especially under RG3 since his first season. Obviously, since his first season, that wasn't that long ago, but still. it's what have you done for me lately? If he was winning, you have to play your hot hand. Kind of the Colin Kaepernick, Alex Smith type of thing. He's not winning, he's still on the Redskins RG3's back. All right. Let's get into week 7 picks in the week. Thursday night football. We got the Jets and the Patriots. Short week for the Jets. Well, I'm sure week 4 for them, but Jets coming off a bad loss against Denver.
And New England. Oh, by the way, I'm sorry. I know we went into we were kind of wrapping the show up, and we're kind of. I gotta say one thing, and I'm typically not the apologetic type for the Jets, but I will say this. The Jets game was a lot closer and a lot better played than the score would suggest.
Well, if the refs had done their job, we might have actually been in that game. And I say that because of the one key play at the end of the first half, where it was a catch at the sideline by Eric Decker, which would have put the Jets in, definitively in field goal range, but still with enough time to possibly make a shot at the end zone. And replay clearly showed possession of the ball, two toes on the ground, kicking up the, whatever you call it, the seed or whatever. And they still ruled it incomplete. Nobody that I heard in the booth, commentating, radio, Twitter, had any kind of legitimate explanation for why they didn't reverse that call. But they didn't.
Yeah.
I understand can't control the refs. I understand every team gets bad calls. But, and I want to try to say this somewhat biasedly, even though I'm a Jets fan. The Jets have gotten screwed with a lot of calls this season. You can go back to the Chicago game, to the Green Bay game. There's been a lot of legitimate calls that the Jets have gotten screwed on. And not ones that are kind of questionable, that if you're a fan, you say it goes one way. You know, if you're not a fan, you say it goes the other way. These are definitive, concrete, referee downgrading calls that the Jets have gotten screwed on in several of their losses this season. With that said, Jets and Patriots, I will take the Jets.
And I'm going to take the Patriots.
Brady's a little banged up. The Jets still have a good front seven. Patriots don't really have any legit receivers that we have to be overly concerned about.
Well, which is good, because the Jets don't have any legit defensive backs to cover anyone.
Very true. I'm happy DeMilano's out for the season. It means we don't have to worry about him being a liability on the field. All right, Falcons. Okay, so I have the Jets. You have the Patriots on that. Falcons at the Ravens. I'm taking the Ravens.
I believe I picked the Ravens. Sorry, I'm... Yep, Ravens.
All right. Both of them. Titans at the Redskins. I'm taking the Titans. I think that's kind of a toss-up. It's one of the more not good games. It's not a good game in any means, but it's one of the harder to call, I think, this week. I'll go with the Titans on this one.
I see the Titans winning this one. I think it's an easy enough game that they should be able to win that.
All right, Seahawks at the Rams. Rams gave the Niners a run for their money throughout the majority of this game. Austin Davis just couldn't get it done at the end, but he still played a lot better than guys in this league that were drafted in, say, the second round, like Geno Smith. For a guy that was undrafted and released by a couple of teams, Austin Davis certainly looks pretty decent. Gave the Niners a run for their money, but Seattle coming off a loss against Dallas, they're not going to lose two in a row. I'll take Seattle on this one.
Yep, I agree. I got Seattle on this.
Browns at the Jags. I got Cleveland.
Me too.
I actually want to take a walk on Cleveland. Bengals at the Colts. This, to me, outside of a couple of the late games, this is one of those really good games that I'm looking forward to watching this Sunday. I got the Colts.
Surprisingly, so do I. I don't really pick them for anything.
Even though the Bengals were my Super Bowl pick, I should pick them. I got the Colts. I'm riding Andrew Luck. He's my star in fantasy. I'm riding him all the way. Vikings at the Bills. I got the Bills.
And I actually have the Bills too. So I think I'm kind of surprised at my picks this week.
Bills have been playing well. I mean, they lost to New England this past week. Bills have been playing pretty well this season. Vikings, Terry Bridgewater showed this past weekend he's not ready. He got beat up. He threw a whole bunch of interceptions. They cannot get the running game going with Matt Asiato or Jared McKinnon. Cordarrelle Patterson is really the only shining star on that team. He can't do it all himself. A lot of rebuilding going on in Minnesota. I'll take Buffalo here. Dolphins at the Bears. I got the Bears.
Bears.
Saints at the Lions. This one was tough. I like the Saints. I think the Lions just have this one. It's an away game for the Saints. The Saints do struggle on the road. They're coming up their bye, which helps, but the Lions got a little momentum in their favor. They are probably without Calvin Johnson, which can significantly hurt them. What was the final score this past weekend? They beat Detroit. They beat Minnesota 17-3. I'm going to take New Orleans on this one.
And I, sir, am going with the Lions. I am calling the right game, right? Yep.
Yep. All right, so we split on that one. Good. We got Panthers and the Packers. I'm taking the Panthers. Defense is too good for that team.
No, but the Packers are still the Packers. I mean, you just got to go with it, with them. Until they give you a legit reason to not pick them, you always got to go with them.
They had to rally late and resort to some trickery, some tomfoolery, if you will, to beat Miami this past weekend.
But you know what? Look, it happens, though, right? I mean, sometimes the game that you should win, you lose, and then the game that should be easy one is the ones you have to stand up for. I mean, it's okay.
All right, very good game starting the 4 o'clock games, one that looks like this early in the season could go a long way in determining one of the wild cards in the AFC. This is a divisional game, the Chiefs at the Chargers.
I'm going Chiefs.
The Chiefs coming up that bye. I think they have a few more weapons than the Chargers do. Chargers are a good team, very good. A lot of weapons. I think the Chiefs just outshine them just a little bit. Again, coming up the bye, coming up that little bit of rest. I'll take the Chiefs on this one. Arizona at the Raiders, and taking Arizona.
And I am going with Arizona. I mean, come on.
Arizona's in first place in the division, despite Carson Palmer and Drew Stanton kind of flip-flopping in the starting role. Two quarterbacks who I'm not very fond of, but they still managed to be a week 5-1 right now. I'm taking Arizona all the way on that. Giants at the Cowboys. Nice, tough game, rounding up 4 o'clock hour.
And go ahead. All right, you know I got to pick my Giants.
Cowboys are just—they're rolling right now. All right, Sunday night football game. I'm quite excited about San Francisco 49ers at the Denver Broncos. Peyton Manning is 2 behind Brett Favre for most touchdowns of all time, and it's not any kind of coincidence that they gave him a nice prime time game in front of the entire nation to go ahead and try to tie or pass that record. It's going to be a big 3-4 touchdown game for Peyton Manning and Denver Broncos. He loves that spotlight. And he's going to break the record on national TV. That's Broncos.
Yeah, I mean, I got the Broncos, but I guess I never thought about what you just said until you said it. I mean, you got to figure someone somewhere was doing the math, right?
Yes. They absolutely were doing that. You know, look at Devin Hester with the Falcons when he ran back when he broke Devin. With Devin Hester when he broke Deion Sanders' record. It was a nationally televised game. Yes, it was Thursday night, but Thursday night games are now televised on CBS also. So it's still a national audience. They do the math, they calculate, they have their sabermetricians and statisticians and all these people that can try to figure out the best probability of when these records can be broken and make sure that they give a national audience. It is no coincidence that this game was scheduled for this week, and it was a primetime national audience game. To give Peyton Manning that spotlight. So we both got the Broncos on that?
Yep.
All right, Monday Night Football, Texans at the Steelers. Not a great, exciting matchup for Monday night. I'm actually going to take Houston on this one. Houston's playing pretty well this season. Not terrific, but playing pretty decently. Steelers are they're playing better than expected, but they're still struggling here and there. Just getting beat by Cleveland, where Houston gave Indianapolis a run for the money. J.J. Watt is scoring a touchdown every which way he possibly can. I think next week he's going to pass one to himself, and he's going to have a passing and receiving touchdown all in one play.
I mean, I'm going with the Steelers. I'm just not convinced. The Texans have shown me nothing to convince me that they're a team that wants to win this season, so got to go against them.
And I agree with that, but I think I can say the same about the Steelers. Like, to me, this is just more of a...
Well, yeah, I mean, look, to be honest with you, this pick is because I have to pick someone. Yeah. I don't believe in the Texans this season. And since I have to pick someone, obviously, you know, I have to pick the Steelers. I mean, I don't believe the Steelers are going to do squat either, but I got to pick somebody.
Yeah.
Unless I can pick the refs.
As I love to say, close to the midgets. Type of game. It's two teams that are decent. They're good fundamental football teams. They're not teams that you can touch on. They're not the Raiders or the Jaguars. You got to get up to play both of these teams, but they're not going to make any noise in the playoffs. I think the Texans with J.J. Watt just have a little bit more talent on their side. I'll take the Texans. And that about does it for this week. We'll be back next Tuesday night with an all new episode of The Fifth Down. As always, follow us on Twitter at FifthDownNFL.com/podcast. Check out the website again, fifthdown.org, click the content, click the button, and click the button.